Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our series of fixed income conversations, specifically focusing in on an update for the preferred securities sector. With that, joining me right here today in studio at our 1285 podcast booth here in New York, I'm glad to welcome back Senior Fixed Income Strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Frank Saleo. Frank, it's great to be with you today here at the table. Thank you for dropping by.
Thanks, Dan. Great to be here.
So, Frank, as a starting point for today's conversation, of course, as mentioned, it will focus in on the preferred securities sector. For our listeners, it might be helpful if they hear from you a general overview and introduction of the preferred stock space and how to invest in it.
Absolutely. Sure. Well, the thing to keep in mind is investors usually choose preferreds for the relatively high yields from generally good quality issuers. So those are the two main points right there. Relatively high yields from good quality issuers. The main issuers of preferreds are large banks, sometimes called the money center banks, and also super regional banks. So many of the household names that we're all familiar with in the banking sector. In fact, U.S. banks are actually required to issue preferreds. So that's why banks comprise such a large portion of the sector's issuer composition. And it's those high-quality banks that give the sector its quality bias. Preferreds represent a bank's additional core capital. So common stock is the bank's primary source of core capital. It's called Tier 1 capital. But then preferred stocks are additional Tier 1 capital. And when it comes to priority of cash flow and claim on assets, preferreds are subordinated to all forms of debt, but they have a higher claim on assets and a higher claim on cash flow than common shares. So from that standpoint, preferreds are somewhat like hybrid securities. So in the corporate capital hierarchy, preferreds rank below bonds, below all forms of debt, but above common stock. So what does this all mean? It translates into a relatively higher yield for preferreds than for bonds. In fact, the yield premium on a bank's preferred, the preferred yield relative to, let's say, risk-free benchmark treasury rates, tends to be about 1.5 to 2 times the yield premium on that same bank's corporate bond. And preferred yields also approximate BB rated high yield bonds, although they have better issuer quality, as we mentioned earlier. And right now, we're talking about yields in the range of about 5.5%. But another thing to keep in mind with respect to bank preferreds is that the coupons are considered qualified dividend income from a tax standpoint. So they're eligible for favorable tax treatment. So that 5.5% yield actually translates into something higher on a taxable equivalent basis. For those in the highest tax bracket, 5.5% actually translates into a taxable equivalent yield somewhere closer to 7%. So you're getting all of this extra compensation, but the reason for that is you're getting the extra yield compensation in exchange for subordination. As I mentioned earlier, they kind of occupy this hybrid spot in the corporate capital hierarchy. And also, you're getting the compensation in exchange for unknown redemption timing. Preferred stocks are potentially perpetual, but they're also callable, and they can be redeemed at any time at the issuer's discretion after the expiration of a call protection period. So Dan, in a nutshell, that's basically what people need to know when investing in preferreds.
Well, Frank, that was a great way to start the conversation. Very helpful for our listeners getting some background there on the preferred securities sector and how to invest. Maybe now we can switch over to performance, as we're hard to believe we're recording here on Friday, October 18th, well into the fourth quarter. How has the preferred sector performed on a year-to-date basis here in 2024? And Frank, what's the outlook ahead as we're looking towards 2025?
Sure, right. We're going to hear more and more people thinking about that in the weeks ahead. And like you said, it's hard to believe the year end is rapidly approaching. But 2024, so far, it's been a pretty good year, particularly in contrast to 2022 and 2023, which were quite difficult years for the preferred sector, and I would say for fixed income more broadly. The primary reason for that was the Federal Reserve's historic rate hiking campaign that had been taking place during those years. But by contrast, 2024 has been pretty much a stellar year for preferreds. As we head into the end of October here, the rally in fixed income more broadly has been somewhat halted by a recent backup in treasury rates this month after some strong economic data, particularly the September jobs report. But that notwithstanding, preferreds remain the strongest performing fixed income sector this year, with year-to-date returns through September 30th of about 12%. That's the sector's best returns in 5 years, and they've returned 20%. They've logged it a 20% gain through September 30th on a trailing 12-month basis. Now, drilling down deeper into that performance, preferreds can be segmented into two subsectors based on par value. You have your $25 par preferreds and your $1,000 par preferreds. And this year, $25 par preferreds have generally outperformed their $1,000 par counterparts, with year-to-date gains of about 12.5% versus 11% for the $1,000 pars. But the $25 par preferreds have generally had greater price volatility. Now, this relates to the fact that the $25 par preferreds are mostly fixed coupon securities, so they have longer duration or more interest rate sensitivity, while the $1,000 pars have variable rate coupons. Now, in terms of the outlook, the primary drivers of preferred returns over the past year have been valuations, interest rate trends, strong fundamentals, and strong technicals, or those supply-demand dynamics that we observe in the market. And in the past year, I've referred to these dynamics as the four-legged stool of support for the preferred sector. Coming into the year, I was looking for returns in the high single digits, possibly low double digits, in terms of a total return target for the year. And as we head into year-end, performance so far looks to be on track with that forecast. Now, as we look ahead, again, in terms of outlook, those four performance drivers are not likely to provide the same level of support that they have over the past year. Valuations, for example, are less attractive than they were at the start of the year or late last year. And the tailwind of lower interest rates has largely played out. Interest rates will continue to be supportive, but they just won't provide the same level of tailwind as those interest rate trends have in recent months. A year ago, getting back to valuation, yields were well above historical averages on an absolute basis, and most preferreds were trading below par, so it was actually an opportunity for price appreciation potential, which is not usually the case in the preferred space and, frankly, in fixed income more broadly. But today, many of those discounts have disappeared. Yields have gone down as prices have gone up and risen closer to par. And so valuations are not as attractive as they were a year ago. Meanwhile, the rate backdrop will remain benign, as I mentioned, but less likely to drive performance from here. On the other hand, fundamentals remain supportive as the operating environment improves for the banking sector. And the technicals, those supply-demand dynamics, remain pretty strong. Preferred calls and redemptions continue at a very strong pace and sort of shrinking the supply of investment opportunities, investment options. So on balance, Dan, I would say we should expect more modest returns from the preferred sector from here. A pullback before year-end would not be surprising, particularly around potential volatility around the election and things like that. But there are still a few opportunities in the preferred space to find good yield.
So with that, Frank, with those return expectations in mind, you mentioned some uncertainty out there as we're heading into Election Day. How should preferred investors think about positioning as we're heading into year end?
Yeah, well, I think it always makes sense for investors to diversify by par value. Again, I mentioned we have $25 par preferreds and $1,000 par preferreds. And also investors should diversify by coupon type. As I mentioned, we have these $25 par preferreds and the $1,000 par preferreds. And the $25 par preferreds are primarily fixed rate coupons, as I mentioned, while the $1,000 par preferreds are all variable rate structures. And there are actually two main types of variable rate preferreds. We have fixed to floating rate preferreds and fixed rate resets. The fixed rate resets pay a fixed coupon during their initial non-call period. It's typically 5 years. Then, if the preferred is not called, the coupon will reset off of the prevailing 5-year treasury rate at the time, plus a predetermined reset spread. And the coupon is then reset and fixed for a subsequent 5-year period. So these fixed rate resets are also sometimes called fixed to fixed structures. This contrasts with the fixed to floating rate structure, which has a quarterly coupon reset. The coupon resets every 3 months in the case of the fixed to float if it's not called. So overall, gaining sector exposure with a combination of fixed and variable rate coupons and different types of variable rate structures could lead to better resilience. And Dan, I would say there are still some pockets of opportunity in today's preferred market, particularly as it relates to these fixed rate resets that are callable with reset dates and call dates within the next 12 to 24 months and that continue to trade at a discount to par. You know, this March, we're going to mark 5 years since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic lockdowns and 3 years since the Fed began its historic rate hiking cycle that I mentioned earlier. And those two events, they really reset the entire rate cycle. We broke out of the low rate paradigm that we had been in for the prior decade, kind of locked into that low rate environment with the Federal Reserve at a zero interest rate policy for most of that time. But looking out over the next few years, it's very likely that we'll be in a higher relative rate backdrop overall. And the variable rate preferreds issued during that prior interest rate regime will likely perform very well as they see their coupons potentially reset higher, supporting their price and their yield. So these structures have really offered some of the best total return opportunities over the past year. And they continue to look pretty interesting to me from here, and I highlight specific recommendations each month in a monthly update called the Preferred Top Picks Report.
And with that, Frank, I will cite that the latest edition can now be located up on UBS.com/CIO for our listeners. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like a copy, direct copy of the Preferred Top Picks Report. But Frank, very productive conversation. Thank you for dropping by the studio for this Preferred Securities update and look forward to having you back again soon.
Likewise. Absolutely. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.